Hello and welcome to the Food Connections podcast, a podcast that connects you with the food you eat. I'm Dr. Laura Wyness, a registered nutritionist, and I love learning more about the food we eat, how it's made, and getting to know the people involved in making our food. This episode is all about the story of our food from field to fork. I'm joined by Dr. Lucy Williamson, former vet turned award-winning registered nutritionist. Lucy has over 30 years' experience in health, food and farming. Founder of The Gut Project, she reconnects health and well-being to food and nature-positive farming via the gut microbiome. She's a keen advocate for British farming. Lucy is ambassador for Love British Food. She provides evidence-based nutrition support to food producers, along with regular media contributions, most recently Radio 4's food programme. Her newly approved Gut Health Learning Platform aims to help health thrive through food choices that promote people and planetary health. I hope you enjoy listening. Well, hello and welcome to this podcast episode. And this time we are joined by Dr. Lucy Williamson. So hello, how are you, Lucy?
Hi, Laura. I'm great, thank you. Really delighted to be here.
It's great to have you on as a guest. We kind of know each other through our nutrition circles. I guess we met a few years ago, didn't we? And you do have some connections with Scotland, I believe. So you were living here at one point and studying here, is that right?
Yeah, yes. No, my heart is definitely in Scotland. I can't claim to be Scottish, but I grew up just outside Edinburgh in the late 70s and went to uni at Edinburgh University. It's where I did my vet studies and, yeah, lived on and off up in Murray, actually, even further.
Oh, yeah.
My husband's in the military, so.
Is that near Lossiemouth?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and just love up there. So we have a lot of holidays up there still.
Yeah. Lovely beaches.
Yeah. Oh, just the best place in the world.
You've got a fascinating biography or history and experience. So, I mean, you used to be a vet and now a human nutritionist. So how did that happen or what made you change career?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting career path. I always just loved the natural world and wanted to do something that connected me to nature and kept me outside, basically, which drew me to being a vet and very much a farm vet. And then I kind of got into small animal practice and I really began to enjoy actually making people happy. So through getting pets that are obviously so precious, better and healing them, I really started to enjoy and realize that I really enjoyed the connection with people. But I'd also always had a real fascination around food as a very natural form of medicine. You know, it's our fuel. And I became more and more curious about that as a mum. And when I finally kind of my children were a little bit older and I had the chance really to get back to work, I just knew I wanted to get more into human health. So I did a master's in nutrition at King's College in London, where we were living close to at the time. And that was where I discovered the amazing world of the gut microbiome and gut health. And for me, it was a real, it was like I'd come full circle. I discovered this real natural approach using food to health. And so, yeah, from that point onwards, I just wanted to concentrate on kind of protecting our health, I suppose, and just supporting people as a nutritionist.
Yeah, no, it's great to hear the story and your career progression. This episode, I wanted to talk about the whole story about field to fork. So I wondered if we could start by maybe clarifying some of the terms used around this area, a bit of a myth-busting session, because there are many different terms used, for example, nature-friendly farming or regenerative farming, climate-friendly, organic. What is regenerative farming or nature-friendly, for example? Are they the same thing?
It gets really confusing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's great to be able to get a bit of clarity. And actually, this is where my background as a farm vet, which is great. I never thought I'd be able to use it as a nutritionist as much as I can, but it is this lovely, gives me this lovely connection back to agriculture where our food is produced, of course. So I think the first thing is to say that all these terms that you hear, whether it's sort of nature friendly, climate friendly, regenerative, organic, they all have the same aim, which is they are trying to farm in harmony with nature. And it's also important, I think, to say right at the start that the more sort of conventional farming is that obviously involves more chemicals on the land. That is just the way that farmers have been encouraged to farm for years and years and years. And it's really hard for farmers to transition from that conventional farming into the more nature-friendly methods, because it's complicated. It requires a lot of learning. It requires a lot of time, and it requires a lot of financial support as well. So, you know, we need to really support our farmers. And there's probably room for all these types of farming in order to produce the food that we need. But basically, regenerative farming, which is kind of the term, I suppose, that covers all the different types of nature-friendly farming, is basically a system where, rather than enriching the land with nitrogen and so fertilizers and using pesticides to try and keep crops clean of disease, you're doing it all through sort of natural ecosystem principles. So, you know, just as we have microbes in our gut, which build our resilience, the microbes that are in the soil, which have been in the soil for millennia, they are, if they're allowed to do their thing and they're not killed off by the use of chemicals, then actually they are really building the soil, helping to build the soil structure and to build really healthy soils that retain water better, and they capture carbon better, and they release nutrients better to crops. So, you know, you're relying on working with the natural ability of the land to restore soil rather than actually using chemicals. And, you know, with organic farming, that's a certification process that you go through. You're still allowed to use a very small number of chemicals and a small number of antibiotics. But regenerative farming is really the principles, I suppose, that all these types of nature-friendly farming are based on. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you go into, you know, you might notice that a packet of beef is being sold as pasture-fed beef or grass-fed beef, and that's kind of the next stage that can get confusing too.
Because when you look on labels in the supermarket for, as you say, when you're buying meat, is there a difference between when it says pasture-fed or grass-fed?
It's a brilliant thing to give clarity on, because basically cattle, or any grazing animal, whether it's sheep or goats or cows, they have these five stomachs which are designed to be able to digest grass. So, you know, we can't digest grass, we can't eat it as humans, but they can digest it for us and turn it into really healthy food in the form of meat or milk. And if they are fed 100% grass, so 100% grass-fed, and actually it's the 100% bit that's really important, what that means is they are out at grass for as long as possible, probably 200 days or so during the year. And the rest of the year, over the winter, rather than getting concentrate feed when there isn't grass available, they'll be fed a dried forage from that farm. So, you know, the grass or a crop from the farm, that becomes their diet over the winter. So basically they're getting all their food from what their digestive system is actually designed to digest. So they're designed to digest grass and forage, not really designed to digest concentrated grain type feed very well. So 100% grass-fed means that that's all they're getting. And you can look for that on labels now. And pasture-fed, which is another logo that you'll get, or that you'll see, is it's similar, but it just means, as well as the grass in the field, they've been sown with what we call herbal lays, which also have things like clover and other herbs and grasses in there as well. So it's quite a mixture of different types of plants, which then enriches the soil even more. Yeah, so they're both really great choices. And, you know, I'm sure we'll maybe go on to discuss how that actually impacts the quality of the food that they're producing for us.
Yeah. And is most of, I know there's lots of different farming systems, but in the UK, is it mainly grass-fed or pasture-fed cattle that are farmed in the UK?
Yes, I think you probably see more grass-fed than pasture-fed.
Mm-hmm.
The slight confusion is that technically, if a cow is outside, then it can be called grass-fed because it's getting grass in the summer. But the key is it's 100% grass-fed. So it's that all-year-round feeding of grass that is not yet mainstream.
Okay.
Most cattle are conventionally farmed and would be getting, you know, a reasonable amount of grass, but probably quite a lot of concentrate feed as well.
Oh, okay. So that they're pellets, feed pellets.
Exactly. They're pellets, and they'd be indoors over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas regenerative farming systems, you know, whether it's all like an organic, organic beef or organic dairy, for example, they have to be out at grass outside for more than 200 days of the year,
mm-hmm.
and likely to be fed forage over the winter. So it's either 100% grass fed or pasture fed. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you for clarifying that.
Kind of animal welfare, I guess. You know, at the end of the day, in the UK, all our farming is absolutely, it is the highest animal welfare. You know, we're among the top of countries in the world with that really high animal welfare. But these farming systems that are really working in harmony with nature, where the animals then outside more and sometimes for the whole year, obviously they're allowed to kind of do their natural behavior a little bit more. So
mm-hmm.
some people will choose that kind of food because of animal welfare.
Yeah. And it's reassuring, you know, you as a vet have experience on farms saying, you know, we have really high animal welfare standards in the UK. And on labels as well, you sometimes see the quality assurance labels. I know there's maybe different ones in different parts of the UK, but certainly in Scotland, there's the Scotch beef and the Scotch lamb and specially selected pork labels, which gives reassurance.
It does really give reassurance. And I think it's really important to say that, you know, even when we're talking about all different types of farming methods, even if, some dairy farms, the cows are inside the whole time, and people might not like the sound of that. It's a very, very conventional, very intensive farming. But actually, with my vet hat on, in order for those cattle to produce the milk at, you know, the yields that the farmer would want, they have to be really relaxed, really happy animals. If they're stressed, they're no good. So whatever the system, I think it's fair to say farmers, you know, literally will always put animal welfare first.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like the Scotch beef, Scotch lamb, specially selected pork in Scotland, these are all logos to look for, as you say, to be reassured.
Mm-hmm. And sustainable eating, or eating in a way that's good for the environment as well as your health, is obviously becoming increasingly important for a lot of consumers, and especially in recent years. So I wondered, can you kind of help clarify what is sustainable eating? What does it actually mean?
Thank you, Laura. I really love that question, because I think that word sustainable, you know, there is a lot of greenwashing that goes on, isn't there? And it's kind of helpful to perhaps define it. And historically, perhaps we've all felt that word sustainable, when we're thinking about our food choices, is maybe really just thinking about the impact of on the environment and how they're farmed, which obviously is really important. But I always like to sort of add into that, but it also, that food obviously also has to sustain our health. I mean, that's what food is for in the first place. So I love to bring that into the conversation, and I think it's really important. So we can think of a sustainable food as it's got to meet our own nutritional requirements while looking after our planet at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be quite different. You know, I think maybe an interesting example to sort of show what I mean by that would be to just take something like milk, and let's say organic milk, because it's a little bit more sustainable, and compare it with like a plant drink, because that's often what's mm-hmm. swapped in. And, you know, I think it's so much confusion now. You go into a supermarket and there is just so many different choices of plant drinks, and we're kind of led to believe, the way they're marketed, that they're going to be really healthy and really good for the planet, and that maybe dairy isn't so good for the planet. But we actually know that dairy farms, where they're farming with nature, and, you know, whether that's all organic or these terms that we've been talking about, because of the way they're farming and actually the action of those cattle as they graze, they really improve the health quality of the soil. and the soil will capture more carbon and draw more carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, for example. Dairy can be a very sustainable food. It's, you know, it's taking grass that we have a lot of in this country, converting it into a really nutrient-rich food for us. It's using rain that we have a lot of in this country. So there is a lot about dairy that might surprise people is actually quite sustainable. Whereas if you compare that with maybe almond milk, you know, that's all being imported. A lot of the almonds are coming, not all, some of it is European, but a lot of it comes from California, where they've had drought for a decade now, and a lot of water, tap, blue, you know, proper irrigation systems used in its production. So, you know, it's like actually, and then the nutrition that we get from dairy compared to the nutrition we get from almond milk, they're not, you can't really, I mean, obviously, Laurie, you know this as a nutritionist, but they're not, you know, plant milk is not a nutritional alternative to dairy, because the dairy is so much nutrient, more nutrient rich. But obviously for some people who are dairy intolerant, then plant milks become really important. So, you know, it's just an example of how you've got to weigh all these things up to be able to make sustainable choices. And it can get really, yeah,
really challenging and confusing as well.
Really quite challenging, yeah. And some things are marketed in a way that makes them look so beautiful and green, and, you know, it can be hard.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, how easy is it to eat in a sustainable way? And by the sounds of it, it maybe is a bit confusing over, you know, how food is produced, or there's different ways of producing food. So what do you look for when shopping, or what advice would you give to consumers who maybe want to eat more sustainable foods in a healthy way to still get the nutrients?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's all about that balanced nutrition and making sure we're sustaining our own health. And I just love the simplicity of saying, make sure that your plate is filled with about 2/3 plants. So, you know, the term plant-based, that again, we're all being really, rightly so, really encouraged to embrace. Actually, it doesn't mean exclusively plants. It means, yeah, about 60% of your food should come from plants, because we understand that, you know, that is the way to go. We need to eat more plants. It's better for the planet. So I would say do that, and remember that that can be, it's not just fruit and veg, but it's beans and pulses are such a cheap,
yeah,
protein-rich food, brilliantly sustainable foods, a lot of them now grown in this country. And then kind of go for that other, the other sort of 30-40%, think of it as sort of less but better quality meat, fish, mm-hmm, dairy and eggs. And, you know, then there's the question of, well, that maybe sounds a slightly more expensive way to eat, but actually we can do great things, like you can bulk out a bolognese with pulses, mm-hmm, and vegetables. Great way to hide the vegetables, in fact, yeah, isn't it? Yeah. And so that would be the simplest way, I think, is, yeah, you know, and try and just spend a little bit of time to understand what is in season. Have you got local producers that you can support? Have you got a local grower, a local smaller market garden, maybe a veg box scheme that you can be part of? Maybe you can go and volunteer on your local market garden, or there's a lot of urban market gardens now in, mm-hmm, cities as well. So these kind of foods are becoming more accessible to people.
Yeah, so the key being lots of plant-based foods, lots of variety, but still including some animal-based foods, because they are really nutrient dense,
yeah,
I suppose, and give a lot, yeah, of absorbable nutrients, vitamins and minerals, and to have that, yeah, that balance, make plants the star of the meal maybe, but, yeah, also some meat and fish and eggs and products in amongst it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, we know from that National Diet and Nutrition Survey that we do every year in the UK, that in general in the UK, you know, our iron intake is low, particularly in teenagers who really need that iron going through puberty. And, you know, calcium intake is actually quite low, and all these nutrients, and there's many others as well, they're all so much more easily absorbed from animal products than they are from plants. They're quite locked away, aren't they, in plants, and it can be actually quite difficult to absorb them. So the way I tend to kind of describe it is that the iron in meat is what we call the heme iron. So it's in the form that we can absorb it straight away. Whereas in plants, it's not in that form because it's not. So heme meaning blood. So like we have iron in our blood, it's the same with animals. So we're getting that iron directly when we eat animal produce. When we eat plants, the iron in plants is not in that form. So we have to, our body has to alter it before it can absorb it. And things like vitamin C in the same meal change the iron in plants so that you can then absorb it much better. So like during pregnancy, if you're sort of vegetarian or vegan, it's really helpful to have, you know, even tomatoes actually are quite rich in vitamin C. So maybe a glass of tomato juice or something, just as an easy win for getting a bit more iron from plants if you're a non-meat eater.
Yeah, helping the absorption.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Now, obviously, you've worked with farmers quite a bit in the past. So I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how important the way we farm our food is for the quality of our food and the nutrition of our food. I know that's probably a big question.
Yeah, it's a resounding yes. And again, I think I would just kind of caveat it with all that farmers have been trying to do is produce good quality food for us for decades and decades. Mm-hmm. Going back sort of 70 or 80 years, that was, they were encouraged to, you know, produce a big yield of food. And so by using fertilizers, nitrogen fertilizers, it really increased the yield and it made us very self-sufficient as a nation, which was a great thing. But unfortunately, at the same time, that process has really destroyed the quality of our soil. And when you start relying on more nature ways of farming, you straight away start to increase the root systems in the soil and increase the microbes and the worms in the soil and the dry matter in the soil. And we are starting to see now, it's very much an emerging area of research, but it's really exciting. And we're starting to see that, particularly within organic farming, where the research has been done, that actually the health, the sort of fertility of the soil is beginning to show a difference in the nutrient density of the food that's growing in it. And you know, these are really early days, and I don't want to get carried away and make claims that we don't yet fully understand, but I think one really great example that I like, because it's so logical, is that vegetables and fruit that's grown in organic systems is much higher in antioxidants, or people might also recognize the name polyphenols, and they are those sort of botanical little nutrients in plants that repair our cell damage in our bodies all the time. I mean, we produce antioxidants ourselves to do that, because it's really a vital process that we're constantly repairing cell damage. But it's really great to eat plants that are rich in these antioxidants to help that process. And when we repair cell damage in our body, it's kind of an anti-aging type process. You know, at the end of the day, aging is cell damage. So antioxidants are really, really vital. And they're also like rocket fuel for our gut microbes, for our gut health. So, you know, they're fantastic. Can't have too few of them really in our diet. And we know in organic farming that plants are much higher in antioxidants. And the reason for that is that those antioxidants are the plant's natural defense system. So in an organic system where you're not spraying on pesticides to kill disease, you're relying on the plant's own resilience to be able to, you know, have a good immune system against, a good defense against disease, the plant has to produce more of its own antioxidants. So then when we eat that food, we're getting more of those antioxidants, which is really helping to impact our own health. So that's one area that is sort of consistently we're seeing that those vital antioxidants higher in really lovely, colourful fruit and veg that's organic. But also actually really interestingly, beef, if it's produced organically, has quite a different fat profile. And so we know that cows that are reared on more grass have meat and milk that is a different sort of fat profile. It's got lower saturated fats and more of the healthy unsaturated fats. So that sort of omega-3 that, you know, we generally kind of know to be heart healthy is higher, consistently higher in organic beef. So, you know, there are these sort of really interesting differences according to how we farm.
Yeah, so it sounds like soil health obviously is really important and can impact the quality and the nutrition of the food. Fascinating to think about the soil in that way.
Yeah.
And you were mentioning earlier about, is it the 6 inches of soil program?
Yeah.
What's that about? Because I have heard about it, but I don't know too much about it.
Yeah, I'd love to give it a quick shout out. So the 6 inches of soil is a British feature length documentary that's been produced about a year or so ago. And it's literally about the top 6 inches of the soil, which is where all the nutrients and the plant roots are. So it's, we rely on that top 6 inches of soil to grow our food, basically. So because of the sort of intensive farming systems across the world, our soil is really being degraded. And, you know, you hear talk of actually we've only got about sort of 45 harvests left if we continue on at that rate, because we're degrading the soil so much. And, you know, and then it makes it more prone to flooding and everything else. So the film is for anyone that's interested in understanding a little bit more about regenerative farming principles. The film follows three farmers who have transitioned into more sort of nature-friendly ways of farming in harmony with nature. And it tells how difficult it is. You know, it shows it in its raw form, but it's a really wonderful film to see. It's I found it a lovely learning curve, and it has been screened actually in some places in Scotland, but it's now just available via the website, via the 6 inches of soil website. You can just click on it and view it.
I'll add the link in the show notes later. That sounds really good to watch. Thank you. And it sounds like, from what you're saying, animals are also good for soil health, or helping nourish the soil.
Again, it's just complete joy for me with that background. And one of the things that I think is so fun to picture is, you know, if you think of the cloven hoof of a cow or a sheep or a goat, and it's just as we go around our gardens with a fork trying to aerate the soil, mm-hmm. that's exactly what they're doing, you know. So there's a system called mob grazing where farmers will keep their cattle in a really small area of land, so that they're doing a lot of that, a lot of the aerating, and they're trampling dead matter down into the soil, and then even tugging with their tongues. So cows have a really long tongue, and they graze long grass, and they wrap the blades of grass around their tongue, and they tug on the grass to graze it. And that process of tugging the grass actually stimulates the roots to produce sugar into the soil, which feeds them in the soil. So it's really, anyway, I could write a book about, well, I couldn't, but it's too much to talk about in the podcast. But yes, they have a really vital role to play in helping the health of the soil.
Gosh, I think I will look at cows grazing in a totally different way now. I think we've discussed a lot there. I guess maybe we have covered this already, but in terms of both nutrition and the environment, what type of diet is best?
Yeah, I think it's, so, you know, everybody has different opinions. And I think at the end of the day, people make choices. You know, people might choose organic because of animal welfare. They might choose it because they're worried about the climate and our nature loss, biodiversity loss, or they might choose it because actually they believe it's been more healthful for them. And these are all different types of sustainability. So I think certainly plant-based, but just remembering that that doesn't mean exclusively plants, and that there are really great choices of animal-based foods, which have a very vital part to play in our diets. And just taking a little bit of time to look at labels and get an idea of how they've been produced. I mean, some producers now have QR codes on their packs, so you can quickly scan it and you can see how they farm, which is, I think, a great idea, because it's quick for people that are generally busy and don't have enough time to stop in the supermarket and read labels. But, you know, there's a great, I don't know if I should mention one in particular, but there's a company called Hodmidods in a couple of hours from where I live in England on the East Coast, and they support nature-friendly farmers. So they're actually farming in this country things like chia seeds and quinoa and, you know, plants that previously we would have imported, but actually we have British farmers growing these now, and you can just go online and order it, and it's dry, so it's not very heavy, so it's not very expensive to get it in the post.
Yeah. Gosh, I hadn't realised that we grow quinoa and chickpeas in the UK.
I know, it's amazing.
I knew of fava beans because I've done an episode on fava beans previously.
Fava beans, amazing, yeah.
But yeah, fascinating. We're starting to grow lots of different beans and pulses, which are so healthy.
Yeah, so good.
Well, that has been fascinating, hearing about the journey, field to fork kind of story. So thank you for that. Just wondered if we could finish with a quick, fun question. Have you a favourite food memory?
I do. I thought about this and I didn't think very long. I have a favourite recipe, which is a very healthy, gut-friendly chocolate bridge cake. And actually, it's on my website if anyone wants to have a look at it. But I have made that since I was probably about 7 or 8 years old. And it has, I have to say, got a lot healthier over the years.
Okay.
So, the original recipe, which was sugar, buttermilk, cocoa, digestive biscuits, which is still nice. I've altered it and it now has oats in it and chia seeds, and the sugar is with ground up dates, and it's got nuts in it, and it's absolutely delicious, and it's still so tasty, but actually much, much lower in sugar, much, much higher in fiber. So you can have a kind of plant rich chocolate fridge.
Yeah.
And I have such happy memories of making it when I was young, and I love it with a glass of milk. And I used to come in from school and if I'd made some, have a couple of pieces of that with a glass of milk, that was heavenly. And it still is. I still love it. And I share that recipe a lot because it's a way of showing that you can still love your food. You know, we need to just enjoy our food, don't we? It should just be joyful and the joy of sharing it. And so to have recipes that are still feel like a treat, but actually we are also just trying to reduce the sugar a bit and eat as many different plants as we can, it kind of sums it up for me, I think.
Definitely, that does sound delicious, and as you say, fairly nutritious as well.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, I think it's a good one.
Right, I will be checking out that recipe. I'll add the link to the show notes as well about that. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you so much again for joining me and spending some time sharing your knowledge on this topic.
It's been great, Laura. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to this Food Connections podcast. Do check out the show notes for some useful links related to this episode. And if you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you could give it a rating and leave a wee review. Also, please do spread the word and tell others about it. If you have any comments or suggestions for future guests, do get in touch. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.